Good evening, and welcome to the Conference Committee on the House File 4, and we'll call this meeting to order. The goal for tonight, and welcome to all of you here, the goal for tonight is really to bring us back into focus, to set up where we are at after the last year's implementation of a transportation bill, so that we understand exactly what has transpired. So we are relying on our wonderful staff from both the Senate and the House, and we are in very capable hands. So that is the goal for this evening. And with that, I believe we'll start with the fiscal staff. Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge and recognize a new member of our conference committee, Senator Franzen, who will be taking Senator Herr's place.
Thank you. I should have done that. Welcome. So with that, we will start with our analysis with the fiscal staff. And Mr. Lee, who did you?
Mr. Chair, I think we talked a little bit before, and I think Ms. Boyd would like to start with the walkthrough of the fiscal items.
A little overeager. Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee. Mr. Lee and I have put together a document called 2015 Transportation Finance Appropriations Comparison. It's two sheets stapled, not to be confused with the other two sheets stapled in your packet. But we'll start this walkthrough. And a little preface that these are provisions that remain in the House and Senate sides of articles, the appropriations article, articles 1 in each bill. And when it's appropriate, I've noted in the last column what the enacted provision was, if there's any need for comparison with what remains in the bill. And they're split up by budget area, so as we go through our regular appropriations article, this is what it would look like, basically. First, MnDOT Aeronautics. This is on the House side. This is the first of many places in Article 1 where the House position is to shift an existing trunk highway fund appropriation, generally a base appropriation, to the general fund. So this is one of those. $2.2 million biennial trunk highway fund appropriation to aeronautics to the general fund, and these all begin in the tails starting in 2018, so it would not affect the current biennium. On the Senate side in aeronautics, there remains the outstanding governor's request of $5 million for a state plane purchase from MnDOT, and that was one-time general fund money. Under Greater Minnesota Transit, the House position was to change statutory appropriations from the Transit Assistance Fund. These are MVEST and leasing sales tax revenues that are statutorily appropriated to Met Council and MnDOT for Greater Minnesota Transit. These are changed to direct appropriations in the House language, I believe based on the latest forecast of those revenues. On the Senate side, the Senate increased ongoing general fund operations to MnDOT for Greater Minnesota Transit by $12 million in the biennium. This is compared to what was enacted. There was an ongoing appropriation, $12 million in 16-17, and then an ongoing increase of $7 million per biennium. What was enacted in Chapter 75 last year was a $5 million one-time appropriation over base. And also in Greater Minnesota Transit, there was a bike peds appropriation of $6 million in the Senate side, $3 million each year in 16 and 17 one-time appropriations. That was from the active transportation account that was created in the Senate language, but was funded with transfers from the general fund into that account. In passenger rail, a House has a remaining item of eliminating the existing $1 million biennial appropriation from the general fund to fund the passenger rail office at MnDOT, and there's nothing outstanding on the Senate side. In freight, there's on the House side, there's another shift of a trunk highway fund appropriation to the general fund beginning in fiscal year 2018. And on the Senate side, there was a provision to fund a new rail safety administration office at MnDOT with $1.4 million a year. This was a governor's item. The governor, I believe, had it funded by general fund, and the Senate chose to fund it from the railroad assessment revenues that were raised in the bill. That was $32.5 million a year, but $1.4 dedicated from it to this office. And under state roads, there's a number, There's a number of things under the House. Under operations and maintenance, there was an overall increase from the Trunk Highway Fund of $51.2 million in the biennium, but also this appropriation was split. There was a new budget category created of snow and ice management, and $130 million of the biennial base budget was shifted to this new category. And on the Senate side, there was an increase from the Trunk Highway Fund of $46.4 million to ops and maintenance. There was an increase. I should note that that increase in the Senate side was funded from increased Trunk Highway Fund revenues related to tax revenues in the bill for the gross receipts tax and the vehicle registration tax changes. The enacted increase of $44.5 million to operations and maintenance was funded by a spend down of the existing Trunk Highway Fund balance. And program planning and delivery, there was a similar split on the House position of a new budget category. These were program planning and delivery is one category in the budget currently. The House position is to split it into program delivery and statewide planning. So there was a shift of part of the base budget, $60.2 million, into statewide planning. And then there was a reduction of $8.6 million in fiscal year 16-17 to regular program delivery. The Senate had an increase in this category, which was kept whole as program planning delivery of $89.6 million. And then the enacted increase was $45.5 million to program planning and delivery. Additionally, the Senate had a one-time appropriation of $260,000 from the general fund for the costs of a road user charge working group under the freight. Interstate road planning. Moving on to state road construction, the House position was to increase the appropriations in the biennium by $413.9 million. The Senate had an increase of $492.1 million. And the enacted increase, again, from the Trunk Highway Fund account balance spend down was $134.5 million. So I should just make clear that the enacted increases are not related to any new tax revenues in last year's Chapter 75 enacted budget. Some additional items under the Senate state road construction category was an additional $105 million one time from the Trunk Highway Fund for turnback expenses. The Senate language eliminates the flexible highway account, which generally pays for turnback expenses every biennium with money from the Highway User Tax Fund. This account is eliminated in the Senate language, and the commissioner is directed to specify in their budget request every 2 years what amount they will need for turnbacks. So this amount was $105 million, estimated to be what the department would have spent on turnbacks and was given as a transitional appropriation. Additionally, there was a one-time appropriation of $5 million for noise barrier construction along trunk highways, and $2 million from the Trunk Highway Fund for funding of the newly created state right-of-way acquisition loan account, which is created later in the Senate language. Debt service in all three is just related to different bonding authorizations over different periods of time. There's not much more to say about that. The debt service is what it is for a certain level of bonding. I'll just point out in the enacted language that there was an additional $12.1 million enacted last year in debt service to support $140 million in trunk highway bonds that were approved in the bonding bill last year. Electronic communications, there's another shift on the House side from trunk highway to general fund in their base budget, $10.3 million. There are no change items in that area, no outstanding change items on the Senate side. State aid highways both saw increases in the county state aid and municipal state aid appropriations, and the amounts are listed there. I'm just going to note that on the Senate side, the municipal state aid, it looks larger than it otherwise would be because the 5% set aside in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund was changed in the Senate language and includes an increased allocation for municipal state aid. So that is that 99.4 is more than would be on the usual formula. Under other local roads, both House and Senate had provisions for small cities assistance. The House had $50 million ongoing, $50 million over the biennium. The Senate had $57 million. These are funded in the Senate side by new surcharge revenues created, or new surcharges created later in the bill and the revenue from those. What was enacted was a $12 million one-time appropriation in fiscal year 16 from the general fund for small cities. Oh, and I should note that the small cities assistance on the House was appropriated from their newly created Transportation Stability Fund, which was created in the House language, but the revenues to that fund were handled in the tax bill in House File 848. So I'm at least not going to talk about them here. The other provisions under local roads for the Senate were the Senate also had a provision for larger cities assistance. These would be cities over 5,000. The small cities, I should note, are cities under 5,000 that are not eligible for municipal state aid assistance. The larger cities are cities with populations over 5,000, but these are monies for their local system roads and not the state aid roads. So the Senate similarly had $57 million like this for the small cities from these new surcharge revenues. Additionally, the Senate appropriated $10.75 million one time from the general fund for the local bridge replacement program. $5 million ongoing, so this is a biennial figure from the general fund for infrastructure on the Safe Routes to School program. And $5 million one time in fiscal year 16 from the general fund for highways on tribal lands. Moving on to agency management, on the House side, there's additional shifts from the Trunk Highway Fund base appropriations to general fund, both for agency services and for buildings under agency management, and there were no change items on the Senate side in that area. And we're done with MnDOT. Met Council, under bus and rail appropriations, both saw reductions on the House and Senate side to their general fund ongoing appropriations for operations. $110.3 million reduction over the biennium in the House. And the statutory appropriations, similar to what was done for Greater Minnesota Transit under MnDOT, the statutory appropriations from the Transit Assistance Fund were changed to a direct appropriation in the House. And that is strictly MVEST revenues for Metropolitan Transit. And on the Senate side, there was a reduction by $39.4 million to Metropolitan Council. And I should note on the Senate side that the reduction was supported by the imposition for the enactment of a metro sales tax, and a large part of that revenue would be going to Metropolitan Council to fill that hole that would be created. The enacted changes for Met Council were a shifting of money from 2015 to the current biennium. $29.7 million of an outstanding general fund appropriation from 2015 was canceled last year, and most of that was reappropriated to Met Council in this new biennium for ongoing appropriations, or ongoing operations, I'm sorry. Department of Public Safety. Again, on the House side, there are a couple of shifts from Trunk Highway Fund appropriation to the general fund. And it looks like I've left out the words to the general fund and those, so they're similar to all the previous shifts. The only thing to note here is that the admin and related services also has appropriations from the highway user tax fund that were shifted to general fund. On the Senate side, the Senate had an appropriation of $260,000 ongoing, so $130,000 a year from the general fund for a newly created labor relations manager in the department, and that was a governor's request. Please, someone stop me if I'm going too fast, Mr. Chair. And continuing on the next page, those are just additional shifts between Trunk Highway and Highway User Tax funds to the general fund in admin for public safety. Under State Patrol, the House had a one-time appropriation of $3.5 million from the Special Revenue Fund for a State Patrol Trooper Academy. I don't know if Mr. Lee would like to say something, Mr. Chair, about this. I couldn't remember what the Special Revenue Fund relevance was there.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe the Special Revenue Fund for the Trooper Academy was from the Vehicle Services account in DVS, the House position.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, there was nothing outstanding on the State Patrol side, or I'm sorry, on the Senate side in State Patrol. Driver and Vehicle Services, there were only changes outstanding on the Senate side. The Senate had a provision to permanently shift the $16.5 million biennial highway user tax appropriation for vehicle services to the special revenue fund to be supported by fees, as are all their other operations at the department, at the Division of Driver and Vehicle Services. In the end, what was enacted was a temporary shift of, or it's not a shift, but a temporary reduction of that $16.5 million biennial appropriation, and was supported by the existing fund balance in vehicle services. And that will, that $8.263 million a year will come back on in 2018. And there were two additional on the Senate side, one to the Department of Revenue that was related to the authorization of a new motor fuels gross receipts tax. This was an additional appropriation from the Highway User Tax Fund to the Department of Revenue to administer this tax. There is already an appropriation from the Highway User Tax Fund in every biennial state government budget bill to the Department of Revenue to administer the current gas tax. So this would be in addition to that. And there was a final provision, an appropriation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Department of Natural Resources of $135,000 each. This came from the state aid administrative account in the County State Aid Highway Fund for a permitting feasibility study related to the Clean Water Act. And that is all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members at this point in time? All right. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the second document for continuing the review of where the conference committee was last year is similarly titled 2015 Transportation Finance Proposals Comparison. This, as well as a two-page staple document that provides a high-level bullet point type comparison of the House and Senate positions as they existed in conference last year. There's also some side-by-side language that we can refer to if there are questions on details. And one thing just to note, so the conference committee is aware, the side-by-side that staff put together with of this language essentially reflects the provisions that were not adopted or enacted last year. So it doesn't include the budget appropriations article because there was a budget enacted. Ms. Boyd just walked through a number of the outstanding or potentially open budgetary appropriations questions. And the side-by-side document also doesn't include those statutory sections where the language was, you know, House or Senate or a combination was enacted in Chapter 75. So those are all provisions that are kind of open for discussion or revisiting by the conference committee if members so choose. But for a starting point of kind of getting through, looking through the language, the side-by-side reflects what's more or less the remaining material. So with that, I'll start in on the comparison. And a couple of these categories have already been touched on in greater detail, so I'll just note them and move on. The first of these is the general fund spending. On the House side, there are some direct general fund appropriations for local roads, county state aid in the Twin Cities Metro, and Greater Minnesota Transit. And then some of the appropriations from the general fund had been touched on earlier for the Senate side. The same thing on the next one is largely covered in greater detail. These are the various changes in the base appropriations coming from the general fund instead of the trunk highway fund or the highway user tax distribution fund. And that was for a couple of different budgetary activities in MnDOT and Department of Public Safety. The next area is trunk highway bonding, and the House and Senate comparison can be viewed here. The House had a position of authorizing $1.3 billion in bonding over 7 years. That was largely $125 million per year for Corridors of Commerce, $5 million per year for the Transportation Economic Development Program, and then $70 million per year for the state road construction, just general trunk highway construction. And those amounts reduced were reduced in half in the last year of that time frame. And then the Senate had a proposal of $1 billion over 4 years. And you can see the division of $200 million a year for the Corridors of Commerce Program and $50 million a year for the Transportation Economic Development Program. And then the next couple of items are Senate-only provisions, and I'll defer over to my colleague, Ms. Berezovsky.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, the next provision on this table deals with the motor fuels gross receipts tax, and that on the Senate side, it imposes a tax on the wholesale business of selling the means to propel vehicles on the state highways. So this is a language that's somewhat lifted from the Constitution in order to reflect the fact that the revenues from this tax would be dedicated just the same as the gas tax revenues are dedicated constitutionally. The rate is 6.5% of a distributor's gross receipts, or 6.5% of $2.50 per gallon, whichever is greater. And I believe 6.5% of the 250 per gallon is 16 cents or 16 and a quarter cents, 16.3 cents per gallon. It's structured, it's the tax is incorporated into the motor fuels tax chapter so that the existing credits for the gas tax, the existing exemptions, means of collection, penalties, and all that are exactly the same. So that at least touches on the motor fuels gross receipts tax. And then the vehicle registration tax changes. And that can be found if you want to see the language. It's on R11 of the side-by-side. And the revisor document side by side, and the changes there. So the existing tax on passenger automobiles is $10. That $10 goes to $20 in 2018. And these dates may or may not be adjusted at some point. It's I'm going by the dates that are in House File 4 at this time. So the $10 tax goes to $20, and then the additional tax that's calculated on the depreciation schedule increases from the current 1.25% to 1.5% of base value. And there's no change to the depreciation schedule. And the Senate language eliminates the provision that would cap a registration amount at the smallest amount that was previously paid on that same vehicle. That provision is gone in the Senate language.
So, Mr. Chairman, what is the result?
Representative Earhart.
What is the result of what you were just for? Whatever you just said.
Okay. How much, Mr. Chair?
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Earhart, how much does it raise?
I think
he
needs to.
Yeah.
How much does it raise?
No, not the total result. Per unit here. What is the effect of what you just said? Because I wasn't sure what you said.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, do you mean the part about the cap, the removal of the cap?
Yeah.
Okay. So under current law now, if the vehicle registration tax was increased, if the rate was increased, you would not have to pay more on your same vehicle than you had paid. You would just keep paying probably the same amount year after year as long as you kept that one car. But by removing the cap, you might end up paying more in vehicle registration tax on your vehicle after this new provision takes effect.
On your old vehicle.
Representative Erica, could you use the microphone as well, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I thought I understood, but I wasn't sure until you spelled it out for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue, Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, I think we go back to the House.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, so the next item is the allocation of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And the House position on this is to allocate all of the available funds coming out of that tax to transportation purposes. And currently there's a split in the current law formula between Greater Minnesota Transit and some county highways in the metro area. And the House position would maintain that split and adding all of the available dollars. And the revenue would also account for a legacy fund collections and transfer issue that had been raised last year. And that involves a portion of this sales tax dollars being constitutionally dedicated to under the legacy amendment. And currently, a portion of the dollars that go into the general fund are those general fund dollars are what's going towards legacy. So both the House and Senate positions would account for that in the reallocation. And the House language had a delayed effective date under the original proposal last year, so that it wouldn't have gone into effect until fiscal year 2017.
Mr. Chair, should I take up the Senate side on that?
Ms. Berezovsky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Senate position on the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue in House File 4 is the $32 million that is currently deposited off the top into the general fund is reduced to $22 million that goes to the general fund. Then of the remainder, there is no transfer of 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit. That goes away. But so all of the rest of the revenues go into the County State Aid Highway Fund for the seven metropolitan counties proportionally according to population, except that Hennepin County share is based on 25% of its population. Ramsey County share is based on 50% of its population. And those are the basics of the Senate position.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, one other thing to note with the motor vehicle lease sales tax language that also comes up with the next one is the interaction between House File 4 and House File 848, which is the taxes omnibus. As was mentioned earlier, just so that members of the committee are reminded, that the House transportation package as a whole is effectively split between two parts. And the revenue reallocation, kind of revenue raising side, is in the tax bill. That includes the reallocation of the motor vehicle lease sales tax dollars and reallocation of some state sales taxes and a couple of other tax-related provisions. And then the kind of spending at other transportation, finance, and policy proposals are in House File 4. So from the standpoint of the side-by-side, as well as understanding the House position overall, it also requires some reference in some cases to House File 848. So the state sales taxes is the next section, and that's the House-only position of reallocating funds that's currently from a couple of state sales tax sources. The first is from the state's general sales tax, the reallocation of collections attributable to auto parts, and that would go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The second is from that same general sales tax that, as it applies to motor vehicle rentals, allocating funds towards transit capital. And that would be one of the new accounts that the House proposes within the new Transportation Stability Fund that would be created under the House position. And then the third piece is also a vehicle rental tax. It's an additional 9.2% rate on motor vehicle rentals, and that was the funding stream proposed for small cities assistance. And a couple of those provisions had a delayed effective date under the original proposal. And that, Mr. Chair, then brings us to the local transit sales tax on the Senate side.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, the local transit sales tax in the Senate bill, it has two sections. The first one deals with the existing quarter cent sales tax that is levied in five counties in the metro area. And there are some structural and organizational changes as to how that's administered and awarded in grants. But one change that I want to highlight in that, again, dealing with the original quarter cent, that CTIB is required to establish a goal of at least 40% of all of the tax proceeds to be used for projects in Dakota, Ramsey, or Washington County. And that's over the life of the council's current 2030 plan. And then there's a new section of law that's all new language, and that has to do with imposing, the state is imposing an additional tax of 0.75 cents on all seven counties, and this is for the purpose, for transit purposes basically, but there's a lot of detail as to how that money is to be spent. There is a provision that if four counties, at least four counties, opt out of imposing the tax or collecting the tax, rather, then those counties are not required to collect the tax. If there are fewer than four, then all seven counties are required to collect the tax. The 8.5% of the net proceeds after cost of collection and so on are paid go to CTIB, and the remainder goes to the Metropolitan Council. And there's some fairly detailed language as to how the Met Council is to utilize the proceeds of the tax, and it's to fund projects that are consistent with the council's long-range transportation policy plan. So if you would like to see that language, it begins on R60 on the Senate side. And there are quite a few clauses that have to do with what that money can and must be used for.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earhart.
So that's all tied up in spending administered by Met Council. That's what you're referring to, right?
That's correct, Representative Earhart.
And you have to read the fine print to know what that is. Nobody can explain that without...
Representative Earhart, I'm sorry, what is your question?
Under the spending administered by the Met Council, apparently the council was referring to some language that I suppose we have that here, so I was just wondering if we have to read the fine print to figure out what that is, or does somebody know how to explain that, Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Berezovsky, do you want to take a shot at that? It's rather complex, but go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just so I understand the question, you want to know the purposes for which the council can use this money? Is that the what you're after?
Well, Mr. Chairman and council, this is a change from current law. Serious change from current law, right? Yes. It's 180 degrees from where we're at now, I think. So nobody else has anything to say about the spending that the local transit sale tax is saying under the new Senate language here. That's what I'm trying to discover.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Drozdowski is getting ready to answer Representative Earhart's question.
Okay.
If you would let her get to it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I'd be happy to review the purposes that are listed in the legislation for this spending. The council, the allowable uses, or the required uses in this case, are operating and capital costs to preserve existing bus service, the operating costs of arterial bus rapid transit lines, operating and capital costs for transit expansion in accordance with the council's policy transit plan, and that includes expansion of regular route and commuter bus service, with overall expansion by an annual average rate of 4%. Development of arterial bus rapid transit, transitways, and streetcar systems. Maintenance of affordable transit fares. Regional transitways and streetcars. Transit shelter improvements. Grants to the transportation management organizations in cities of the first class. And that is for programming, administration, service expansion, and so on for these TMOs. Financial assistance to replacement service providers, the opt-outs or suburban transit providers, in the amount, and then their specific amounts, $1,500,000 in 16 and the same amount in 17, and that's for a connections regular route transit service to go from not just into the core, but from the outer city to city.
Mr. Chairman, I think what I was interested in,
Representative Earhart,
current law compared with what we're doing here.
Representative Earhart, you would find all of this on page 60 and 61 as Ms. Berezovsky is going through that. There are changes to it. Some is what the Met Council can already do, but there are changes to it, which are proposed changes, and that's what Ms. Berezovsky is going through.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Representative Earhart, the CTIB, the original quarter cent that's being collected now, the uses for that are not changed. The uses that I've been reading are only have to do with the new money.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
It's important to bear in mind that the reason that these purposes are set forth for the use of these dollars that are raised through sales tax in the metro areas, because these are the things, for the most part, with the exception of a couple of new items that are eligible, like the TMOs and things like that, are currently paid for out of the general fund. The general fund is no longer going to be used for those purposes, and so we have to set forth the eligible purposes previously paid for in the general fund that will now be paid for by the sales tax in the metro area should this proposal pass. So it's not a 180-degree change, as was represented or characterized by Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, that was only a question. Okay. I didn't accuse you of changing 180 degrees.
It sounded like you said it was a 180-degree change.
I asked,
the
was
same thing that's
degree.
Going
we,
on
so
right
so we
now.
Have some clarification
paid for with
here.
The sales tax instead of the general fund.
Okay. Are there any further questions? Okay. Ms. Berezovsky, are you done with that portion? We move to other taxes and fees?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the Senate bill has a railroad assessment. The language can be found on R 48, and that assessment is in the amount of $32.5 million, and this is paid by the Class 1 rail carriers, and it's the $32.5 million is divided up among the Class 1 railroads based on the proportional amount or number of route miles that they operate in the state of Minnesota. And the use of that money is for the rail grade crossing safety improvement account. That the money in that account is appropriated to the commissioner to create a rail safety office within MnDOT, and also highway rail grade crossing improvements on rail corridors where crude oil is transported, and some other routes where hazardous materials are transported as well. Then there are two surcharge and fee additions. There's a $10 surcharge on title transfers and a $10 surcharge on registration renewals. And the proceeds of those surcharges are deposited in accounts for small cities and for larger cities for their roads and bridges. Then, Mr. Chair, there is a fairly long series of sections that changes the fee for special license plates. And the current fee that is set in statute is $10 for a set of special plates, and this bill would raise those fees to $12.50. Also, instead of replacing your plates every 7 years, this would extend that period to every 10 years. The final piece under that category is a penalty surcharge for late payment of registration taxes. And that is a penalty surcharge of $25 for each month following the expiration of the registration period up to $100.
Ms. Berezovsky, would you like to continue with the finance restructuring on the Senate side?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the MVEST, the Motor Vehicle Sales Tax, the allocation is changed in the Senate bill. And the new allocation, currently motor vehicle sales tax receipts go 60% to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. That amount is lowered from 60% to 58%. Then the remainder of the money goes to transit funds. And current law specifies 36% for the metropolitan area transit account, and that 36% is lowered to 34%. And currently 4% goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. And that 4% is increased to 8%. Then there's a series of sections that deal with the 5% of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund that the Constitution allows the legislature to reallocate no more frequently than once every 6 years. And it's been about 8 years now, I think, since the last reallocation. So the Senate is putting forth some changes in the way that 5% is used. Let me just get to the language. There 30.5% goes to the town road account, and this is 30.5% of the 5% of the Highway User Fund. That would continue. 16% goes to the town bridge account. That would continue. So what changes is the remaining 56.5%, I think, is what's left. It's 53.5% is what's left. So 10% goes to the county municipal accounts, and this is where counties are able to fix up the municipal roads within the counties. And 43.5% goes to the Municipal State Aid Street Fund, and that would be allocated the same way that the MSA fund is now allocated under statute. So what changes there is that the money is going for local roads instead of to the flexible highway account, which was a creature of statute, and that statute is repealed in the Senate bill. The flexible account was divvied up by the Commissioner of Transportation according to where the Commissioner perceived the greatest need among certain allowable causes or recipients of funds, and one of them is for turnbacks. Now, what the Senate approach changes that, and Ms. Boyd alluded to that earlier, that it creates new turnback accounts And these are funded, these would be funded by appropriation by the legislature. And out of the trunk highway fund. But it wouldn't be an automatically available to the commissioner, but it would be something the legislature would determine what is the need and then appropriate out of trunk highway for those turnbacks.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, members, then on the House side, there are a few provisions that can also be kind of conceptualized as restructuring. And again, a couple of these show up in the House File 848, Taxes Omnibus House Position. The first of those is the direct appropriations from the Transit Assistance Fund that was touched on earlier, that would be a shift from the open spending authority for both Greater Minnesota Transit and the Metropolitan Council for Metro Area Transit. The second item is a forecasted base of the general fund appropriation to the Metropolitan Council. Currently, the general fund is a direct appropriation made as part of the budget that was, an appropriation in Chapter 75, the Transportation Finance Bill last year, or law, I should say. And the change proposed by the House is to make that forecasted based on such that there's kind of a starting point of where the base was at the beginning of the biennium last year, and some adjustments that would have the effect of lowering the general fund funding for the Met Council down to zero over time. And that would occur as MVEST grows and as another provision that's actually the next one down kicks in, which is requiring the county's Transit Improvement Board to fund all of the transitway operating costs for those transitways that the board had previously funded some development on. So essentially, currently, the county's Transit Improvement Board, or CTIB, funds about 50% of the operating costs, and this provision would require CTIB to pay or cover the full operating costs. And then there was also a one-time directive of some additional dollars as grants that would need to go to the Metropolitan Council. The next provision on the House-only side is changing the base appropriation to MnDOT for state roads. And this would involve the state road construction budget activity as well as operations and maintenance. And it would create a forecasted base so that when the legislature started with the biennial budget process, the starting number would reflect more or less all of the available funds that would be anticipated in the trunk highway fund that would be drawing down the unreserved fund balance. So there would still be a reserve in the fund balance, but the remainder of the dollars would be forecasted in and then still appropriated as part of the budgetary process. And then the other item kind of in this restructuring category was touched on earlier, involving separating out the program planning and delivery as well as snow and ice appropriations into the separate appropriated amounts. And that kind of leads into the first of the next section, other fiscal policy and finance provisions. And the House position included creating a contingent appropriation that would provide MnDOT with spending authority in cases where the snow and ice expenditures exceeded 110% of what the budgeted amount was. So the contingent appropriation works somewhat in conjunction, or does work in conjunction with the split out snow and ice appropriation. And there's also a limitation on how much could be spent under that contingent appropriation. Those funds would come from the fund balance reserves that are held in the trunk highway fund. And that would be following the commissioner's finance policy. The next on the policy and finance provisions on the House side is a adjustment to a overweight vehicle's special permit. So this is in the world of truck weights, and it would be an expansion for the types of commodities that could be transported under that special permit. Currently, it's a special permit for raw and unprocessed agricultural products, and that would be expanded to a couple of other types of commodities. The next provision is a requirement on authorization as coming from the legislature during development, project development process for guideways, so fixed guideway, light rail transit, highway BRT, and so forth. And there would be a cutoff point under the House proposal where development wouldn't be able to continue unless there was legislation that specifically either appropriated funds for that project or just authorized the project to continue. The next piece on the House side ties into a little bit of what was discussed earlier with transitway operating costs. This would eliminate the state share for light rail transit operating costs. And what would be anticipated as part of the how it ties into the rest of the House position is that those funds are then being covered by the CTIB requirement that was discussed a bit earlier. And then, members, the next item is a MnDOT agency efficiencies requirement. And this is this might actually be the first time that we get to where there's a House and Senate language and different positions. For the most part, we've been talking about provisions that are House only or Senate only. A lot of the competing similar but policy difference type provisions were enacted as part of the conference committee last year. So this one on MnDOT efficiencies on the House side, the proposal would require a 15% reduction in expenditures that's based on efficiencies identified in a report that had been originally required from 2008 legislation. And the dates would be one of a number of places where the dates would require some reconsideration, since we're now a year beyond where things were at when the conference committee started up last year. And then finally, Mr. Chair, members, the other provision in which there's House and Senate language and some differences in approach is on a public-private partnership pilot program. So that's, I guess, P5, if we want to call it that. And the House and Senate have substantially similar, there's quite a bit of the language is the same or technical differences, and I'll just highlight a couple of the sort of high-level policy differences between the House and Senate positions. On the House side, it's a more restricted list of what kind of projects could be undertaken that would exclude tolling. And by the way, if you're interested in trying to read through the language, it starts in the modified or kind of amended side-by-side on page R71. So the House position has permits fewer types of projects, whereas the Senate language identifies other types of tolling type facilities that could be part of the pilot program partnership. The House position also includes a 25-year maximum on how long the agreement could extend for. The House expires the overall authority in 2019 and also has a restriction to capital projects and excluding rolling stock for the types of projects that could be undertaken. And both, just as an aside, the language is in different spots if you're looking at the side-by-side, but both the House and Senate positions authorize the pilot project for up to authorizes the program for up to three pilot projects. And then on the Senate side, I mentioned the types of projects could be undertaken is broader. The Senate language also includes creation of a joint program office that performs some oversight type functions. And originally the Senate language had a delayed effective date. And then finally, just to note that this list is, I believe, a lot or the vast majority of the major proposals and finance provisions. There might be a couple of other smaller things that could be identified. So I just want to put a little bit of an asterisk on working through this kind of higher level walkthrough summary.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Ms. Berzovsky, you want to go through the other fiscal provisions then?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. There are a few that I'll mention here. The MnDOT loans for trunk highway right-of-way acquisition. This is a new account that would, a new account and a new program that would mirror the Metropolitan Council's RALF program, or Right-of-Way Loan Acquisition Fund. And this would allow, this would provide interest-free loans to local governments to acquire property within the right-of-way of an existing or proposed trunk highway. And it would also assist the authority if a local authority had to acquire homesteads and provide relocation assistance. This would be interest-free loans for that purpose. And then that fourth bullet is somewhat related, in that expands the Met Council RALF program to include loans for transit capital projects. So that would be, again, acquisition of right-of-way for transit capital projects could be done through this through the existing RALF fund. The driving privilege license, there's a number of sections that relate to that, and that is a second or a different type of driver's license that would be created, and this would be available for people who are unable to demonstrate legal presence in this country. They would still be able to get this driver's license, and it would be marked, I think, for driving only or driving purposes only on it, so that it could not be used to vote, for example. And there's also a provision that requires training of election judges to make sure that they don't use the driver driving privilege card as voting identification. There are a few sections that deal with active transportation programs, and this has to do with encouraging non-motorized transportation. It creates an account and it creates a program where local authorities, or I believe the Metropolitan Council, could utilize funds out of this account in order to establish, to fund programs. And I believe there's I believe it's a grant program, but they could also, I believe, Metropolitan Council or a local authority could create its own active transportation program. And there's the Metropolitan Area account and a Greater Minnesota account. And the Greater Minnesota account, I believe, would be funded, at least in part, by federal money that is dedicated in a section of the Senate bill to that purpose. Then the city parking facility fee authority, and this section this authorizes the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul separately to impose a city parking facility fee that would be paid by the owner of public or private non-residential parking located within certain specified sections of the cities. And the proceeds could be used for pedestrian improvements, public plazas, transit, and bicycle facilities. And there's no need for local approval because it's permissive for the cities. And the Mr. Burris spoke about some of the language having to do with MnDOT effectiveness and efficiencies and so on. And the Senate has taken maybe a few different directions on that. Required a treatment of the efficiencies that were required in the 2009 transportation bill, but the report has already come out in which that analysis was to have been incorporated. And there was, you know, discussion of efficiencies in that report that MnDOT has already produced. And also the Senate bill calls for a study, an in-depth study of the agency itself, MnDOT. I think this would be coordinated by the Humphrey Institute, and it would look at MnDOT and its functions as an agency, its relationship with its districts and so on, its staffing, its budgeting, its organization, and so on. And so that is also here. And then there's a section on project selection, and it directs MnDOT to work on creating and adopting a data-driven process for evaluating proposed highway projects and scoring them, and this would all be information that would be available, accessible on the web for anybody to see where their how their project is ranked and where it stands in the line. And as Mr. Burris said, there are other miscellaneous, smaller in scope provisions in the Senate bill. There are provisions on unconventional vehicles that would allow them on the roads unless they were, unless the local authority prohibited that operation. And there are a few other things that we'll probably get to at some other point that are smaller in scope than the ones that we've discussed tonight.
Thank you very much. Certainly want to thank both our House staff and Senate staff. They did a fantastic job of putting this all together and bringing this into focus as to where we ended, where we're starting off. And there's also some reference material in here as well for all members in regards to some of the provisions that both were included, not included, and some of the positions. But I think we've discussed them quite well tonight. But that is for your reference. At this point in time, are there any questions from members? All right. Well, I want to thank you for your attention tonight, and thank you for those in the audience. We hope this is helpful as we move forward. As we do move forward, Chair Dibble will now have the gavel. And Mr. Chair, any closing comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good refresher. We've already been over these provisions both last year, and then we had a little refresher a few weeks ago. And this is, I think, a little bit more of a deep dive refresher of our relative positions. We will call another conference committee, I don't know when, but soon, within a few days, I think. And, you know, hopefully by then we can start either critiquing or maybe finding some common ground and start making some progress forward. I think we're ready to do that now. Instead of moving forward, my goal, Mr. Chair, is to perhaps have something that we can respond to as a committee, or work together on a committee, and for the public to start responding to sometime before May 23rd, certainly. I think it's been stated a number of times in our all the various legislative updates and forums and appearances that we've made together and separately around the state that it's our shared aspiration to have a package that we can perhaps present and propose as a conference committee to our colleagues within a few weeks. That would be what I would hope we could do, instead of subjecting this to some of the end game stuff. So that's what I would like to do.
Well put, Mr. Chair. All right. And I would certainly echo those comments. So for now, this conference committee is adjourned.